Phil Muscatello and FinPods are authorized reps of MoneySherpa. The information in this podcast is general in nature and doesn't take into account your personal situation.
Shares for beginners. Weekend Watchlist.
G'day and welcome back to Shares for Beginners Weekend Watchlist, where we take a close look at an individual company that you may wish to consider for your watchlist. It's not a recommendation to buy, but a way for you to learn how Stockopedia screens for value. Joining me today is Chris Batchelor, and we're talking Accent Group Limited, ASX code AX1. G'day, Chris.
G'day, Phil. Great to be back on the air with you again today.
Great to have you. So tell us, what is the AX1 story?
So they were founded back in 1988 in New Zealand and listed 20 years ago here on the ASX. They're basically a company that sells shoes. It's their primary operation, both as a distributor and a retailer. You may not have heard of Accent, but chances are you've heard of some of their brands, one of the most famous ones being the Athlete's Foot, also Platypus. They've got a network of some 888, there's a nice number for you, sales outlets, including 853 of those are physical stores and 35 online websites. That store network, you know, it's both multi-branded retail formats as well as focused stores. They distribute some 17 global brands, some well-known ones like Merrell and Timberland, Hoka, another up-and-coming one. And then they've got 26 retail banners and some 10 million contactable customers. So they're actually a really large business, although to the public facing, that some of these stores may look like relatively small chains. They're all held under this one business called the Accent Group. So looking at the retail store network, they've got both franchised and corporate-owned stores, but they're moving more towards corporate structure, meaning that their main brand, the Athlete's Foot, has about 62 of their 155 stores being franchises, but that's reduced from 134 stores some 6 years ago as they've been buying back the franchises. Now, their top three store networks are Platypus, Skechers, and then the Athlete's Foot. And what's interesting, they've really been growing their store network quite rapidly over the last 5 years, really. They've gone from 524 stores back in 2020 to 888, as mentioned, now. But in particular, just the last 6 months, or the first half of this financial year, they've opened 72 new stores and only closed five. That includes a lot for Platypus, as well as a brand called Nude Lucy and Style Runner. They have a couple of or a number of brands that are not just footwear. They also do apparel and women's fashion in particular. So Nude Lucy is a women's apparel brand. Style Runner, that's about 60% footwear, but the rest is apparel. So yeah, they don't only cover off on shoes. An interesting point to note about this company is it's backed by a gentleman called Brett Blundy, and he's a really famous person in the retailing space here in Australia. He made a lot of money back in, few years ago. Back in 2018, he sold a business called Bras and Things for some $500 million. He was also an investor in Adairs. Currently, he owns 40% of Lovisa and a 10% holding in City Chic. Now, he owns 15% of the shares in Accent, and he's also on the board as a director. He previously actually had 19.5% of the shares, but he sold 25 million shares back in September and pocketed a nice $50 million.
They're increasing the number of stores, which seems to be going a little against the tide because of the amount of people buying clothes and things online. Is this anything to do with a certain generation who still like to try shoes on?
I think what's apparent is that a lot of retailing businesses have realized that you need an omnipresence. In other words, you need both the physical stores and the online experience. So they certainly are strong in online. As mentioned, they've got 35 websites and they're looking to build a really good digital experience. But they also believe in having a store network partly as a branding exercise. You know, people like to see and feel and try on the products. And so having stores in various locations really helps with that brand building exercise. I think, yes, like you say, our generation probably feel that you can't buy a shoe without actually sticking your foot in it to see if it's comfortable or not. So they've got the two and they hopefully are complementing each other. And that's certainly their strategy.
And brands are so important to people, aren't they? I mean, a few years ago, I went into the Athlete's Foot and got myself a pair of Merrells. I'd never heard of them, but they just sort of fitted the bill and they seemed to be comfortable. And then a few days later, a young woman looked at them and said to me, "What do you think of the Merrells?" And I went, "Well, they fit." But obviously to her, that was a much more important story about the brand itself.
Yeah, indeed, indeed. In fact, I bought a pair of Merrells some 30 years ago when I was over in the US, and I wore them till they just about fell apart, and then discovered that they had come to Australia and was really chuffed to see them and bought myself a replacement pair. Brands are really important, and people build strong associations with brands, either because they feel it's a really quality product, but also there's the whole sort of fashion element of a brand, which appeals to a lot of people. You know, not everyone's as practical as you and I. They're looking for something that's trendy. You know, one of the brands that they've been doing really well with in recent years is a brand called Hoka. And now Hoka's owned by a US company called Deckers, but Accent have the distribution rights for Australia and New Zealand. And sales have increased 20% over the previous financial year. And it's now one of their best-selling products. Now, I don't know if you know Hoka or not, but Hoka are a running shoe, and they're the fastest-growing running brand in the world at the moment. And they're characterized by their really thick soles, just to sort of make you 2 inches taller if you're wearing a pair. The celebrities are getting around in them. They're really popular. I guess they're probably pretty good to run in as well.
Yeah, that celebrity endorsement overcomes the ugliness, I guess.
I think that's it, yeah.
So it scores pretty well on the Stockopedia screen, apart from the lack of momentum. What do you attribute this lack of momentum to?
Yeah, so it's very interesting to look at the stock. It actually peaked in terms of its share price some 3 years ago, and that was at about $3. It's now trading at, I think it was $1.83 last night. So, and you know, that intervening period has been very volatile. Obviously, it's come down overall, but it's really bounced around a lot. And in fact, if you go back 10 years, that volatility theme really resonates over and over again. It's quite a volatile stock. But having said that, over 10 years, it has outperformed the market quite considerably with an annualized total shareholder return, so that includes dividends, of 21%, and that compares to 10% for the ASX 200. But it has really been a bumpy ride. Now, the thing that is driving this momentum score most recently is the last financial half year. So they had a really strong year in FY23, but the first half 24 results, which were released in February, were quite underwhelming. So whilst some brands still achieved some good sales, like Skechers and the Athlete's Foot, others found it more challenging, in particular their largest store network, the Platypus. They had negative like-for-like sales, retail sales, and overall that meant revenue actually declined by 3.1%, and that's despite all those new stores that we talked about. It's despite the fact that their vertically owned brand sales increased to 60 million from about 50 million. I think a big contributor, they don't break out the numbers, but they did mention in their narrative that wholesale revenue dropped 25%. So that's obviously going to be quite a big hit to the business. Gross margins actually did manage to increase a little bit, but so did the costs of doing business. Higher staff costs, higher occupancy or rent costs. And all of that in a nutshell meant that the net profit after tax, the bottom line, fell by 28%. So that's meant, of course, that the momentum score has really taken a dive. It was 73 prior to those results coming out. It's now right down to 46. And that then in turn, of course, affects the overall ranking, which has dropped from 97 to 88.
Are you picking shares on gut instinct, buying on press tips or rumours? Do you struggle to find the time to keep up with the research and analysis that goes into evaluating potential stocks? Stockopedia are pleased to offer a special deal to listeners of this podcast, a 14-day free trial and a 10% discount on the first year of membership. Sign up now at y.stockopedia.com/sfb. There's no better time to access the most comprehensive, easy-to-use investing toolbox for DIY share investors. 10% off, 14-day free trial and a 30-day money-back guarantee. That's y.stockopedia.com/sfb. So is that lack of momentum what is making this a contrarian stock at the moment?
Yeah, exactly. And that's, to be honest, what caught my eye and caused me to look into this stock. I'm known as someone who focuses on quality and value, and momentum is of lesser importance to me. And what we often see is that when momentum's going down, value's going up. And so those two factors, quality and value, are what are contributing to the overall pretty decent score. It really is a strong business in the quality respect, getting really good returns on equity, really good return on capital. The operating margin at 8.7, that's pretty decent for a retailer. It ranks 14th out of 44 companies in that segment. Health trend is very good at 7 out of 9. The one area that I thought was a little bit of a cause for concern was the bankruptcy risk. It's not in the cautious zone, but it's right on the borderline between cautious and safe. So that meant, you know, well, let's dig a little deeper and explore what's causing that. If you look at the gearing ratios, at first glance, they appear quite high at 117% for the net gearing ratio. But then as I sort of dug into that and stripped out the actual numbers, a lot of that is leases. As we mentioned, they've got a big store network, which means, of course, they've got a large lease bill. Now, leases are an obligation, but they're a little bit different to financial debt. So if we just focus in on the financial debt and look at the net debt to equity ratio, then it's only 20%. And that's a much more comfortable level. They've still got $48 million in cash. So overall, you know, I'm pretty comfortable with the financials and in the balance sheet in particular. Focusing in on cash, if you like, we can see that they actually really generate a lot of cash. Their cash has been growing at a compound rate of 31% over the last 5 years. And when you compare their cash generation to their profit generation, cash is a lot higher. And that tells you that they are turning those profits into cash. Sometimes with businesses, you've got to be a little bit wary of the accounting profit number because it's a number that can occasionally be manipulated. But when you see the cash is strong, then you know that, okay, there's some solidity behind those numbers.
I had a quick skim of the 2023 annual report, and this bland statement stood out to me, which says, a reduction in consumer spending and demand may lead to a decline in the group's sales and profitability, which seems to say that, you know, this is discretionary spending. And when times get tough with higher interest rates and high mortgages, that people might close their wallets up for these kind of purchases.
Yeah, I think that's largely true. It's interesting when you think about clothes and shoes, part of you goes, well, they're essential, aren't they? And yes, they are, but you don't have to have the latest Hoka running shoes. You know, you can get by with something a lot more basic.
You can go to Lowe's.
Exactly, if times are tough. And I think when they made that statement, it was probably, I forget exactly, but it might have been, you know, around September of last year. So they were probably already seeing this trend that has now been reported for that first half. And yeah, that has played out quite obviously, that they have seen a reduction in spending as well as an increase in costs. And so that has impacted sales and profitability. There's no question that is the case. What the bigger question is this a short-term blip or is this a long-term problem? I'm erring towards short-term blip, but there's no guarantee that that is the case. Obviously, they do have a lot of capital invested in this store network. And if they did see a real significant downturn in demand for their products, then that could start to become a problem.
Okay, Chris, so getting out the crystal ball, what's the outlook like?
Yeah, so the big question, as you brought up there, was this reduction in consumer spending and what is the long-term versus short-term implication of that? I mean, just looking at the short-term, analysts are forecasting EPS to decline by 24% this year, but they're forecasting that it will rebound 26% next year, almost back to the 2023 levels, which were really very positive. Revenue is expected to be flat, but again, resume growing in 2025. The EPS forecasts have gradually been declining, and that's contributed actually just to that momentum score being low. Momentum is a factor of not only price, but also of the forecasts for earnings. And over the last 6 months or so, those have been coming down. So there's no question in the short term, the results are not going to be as rosy as they were the previous year. But longer term, yeah, my humble opinion is that they're probably a pretty good business. You know, it's not like they're come by lately. They've been around listed for 20 years and around for a lot longer than that. They've got some really well-respected backers. So I think there's the growth that they're seeing in some of their brands, like Nude Lucy and Style Runner, Hoka, as we mentioned. The numbers for the start of this year were a continued decline. So, you know, we talked about, you know, the first half, but also when they released those results, they gave their 7-week update, you know, at the beginning of the calendar year, January and a bit of February, and sales had declined by 0.7% over that period. That's like-for-like sales. So, and our costs of doing business continuing to see pressure there on rent and wages, albeit not quite as much as previously. So I think you will see this short-term pressure, but in the long term may represent an opportunity. You know, opportunities never feel comfortable, but contrarian investors are people who go against the herd, go against the trend. We'll see. Only time will tell. But right now, you'd have to say the outlook's negative in the short term. If everything turns around, if the economy picks up, then it's probably going to resume its growth trajectory.
So you think being a contrarian investor, like if you did take a position in a company like this and your thesis turned out to be wrong, is it a matter of getting out as quick as possible?
Probably. The general investment philosophy is if your thesis is proven to be wrong, then you should just cut your losses and get out because the basis on which you made that investment is no longer true.
Fantastic. Chris Batchelor, thanks very much for joining me today.
Thanks for listening to Shares for Beginners. You can find more at sharesforbeginners.com. If you enjoy listening, please take a moment to rate or review in your podcast player or tell a friend who might want to learn more about investing for their future.